Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's literally a sound of big arm laughter, and that was just it. Hello again and welcome. This is episode 13 of the Paul Ryder Tapes. I'm Angela Smith, the ex-wife of Paul Ryder, founding member and bass player of Manchester legends Happy Mondays. Paul sat down with me to tell his complete life story with no stone left unturned and opened up about his successes and his struggles with incredible bravery. Then just 12 days after we finished recording, he suddenly passed away. Coming up in this episode.
You never got paid for that.
Never got paid for that. Like everything, really, in my life. Never get paid for it.
He came up with great ideas, and I just thought, if you're going to do that lyrically in the band with Big Arm, then it's going to be a really good journey.
He had a black cape on, and a black hat, and black shades, and a cane.
Yeah.
And he walked in and he said, well, you look like you've done a bit, so if you won't mind fucking off, so we could do a bit. And I'm looking, thinking, this magic actor's got a terrible attitude. I didn't have a clue that he was a singer.
Paul, of course, would be sick at the side of the stage before he went on every single night, because he would always stay fright.
It's good being the house band.
Yeah.
You don't have to play a full song.
So we left off the last episode where Paul had left the Mondays in the year 2000 and we just bought a big house in France that needed a ton of work doing on it.
So we bought the house, did it up, went back to England and you were ready to do some more music at this point. So tell me about that.
I was ready to do something, didn't know what I was going to do. Then I got in touch with an old mate of mine, Pete Smith, who's a great engineer and a great musician in his own right. I'd done some work with him years before.
Pete had worked with Paul on the tracks that he did with his ex-girlfriend, Donovan's daughter Estrella, a few years before. So that made him a natural choice to collaborate with again.
I just got a call out of the blue. And he said, I'm building a studio and, I want to write some tunes. So I was a bit like, all right, here we go again. But it's Paul, so you can't say no, can you? So I came down to Worsley to see a garage, which definitely wasn't a studio at the time, but had potential. And I can remember him saying, yeah, we're going to have a big mural on the wall here. We're going to have a really cool... And I've got these soundproofing things from the Hacienda and I've got this sampler and all this kind of stuff. So I was like, right, okay, well, there's work to do, but I guess, we can get going.
you actually were doing some work with him for me, for my TV shows. You were writing theme tunes with him.
And it just so happens that I have a few of these TV themes in our archive. So let's have a listen to some of the highlights of what they wrote.
Is that how we got in touch again?
I think you're right.
That's how we got in touch with him again, after years of not seeing him. And then we decided we'd write an album and get a band together, which we did. We found, through Rob F., who was our builder at the time, around about that, that time, I found Danny, the drummer. Great drummer, great musician as well.
I think it was in 2002 when a mutual friend, Rob Farrington, introduced the two of us. I used to house show with Rob, and obviously he knew that I was a musician and was always banging on about, you know, how he knew Paul and you need to meet him and maybe you could end up working with him at some point. So I think Rob managed to drag him along to a gig, a nearby gig that I was doing, a local gig somewhere. I think it was in Bamber Bridge, of all places, in Preston. And in walked Paul. I was like, oh, there we go. And I got chatting to him, and he mentioned that he was doing some music with Pete. Would you like to, you know, get involved with that? So I came along, did a bit of singing, playing guitar, some drums.
And then I knew Daz from previous things, so I was like, oh, I've got a guitarist guy.
And Pete Smith was the one who brought the guy who would become the guitarist in Big Arm, Daz Gilkinson, to the table.
I was in a studio at Whitworth.
And Daz initially was only going along to meet Paul and Pete to support a friend.
And one night, the lad who ran the studio got a phone call off Pete Smith asking if he'd come down and do some backing vocals. So I think he asked me just to come along with him as a bit of support. Anyway, when we got down there, I met Pete, and there were some guitars there, so Pete just said, why don't you have a go? So I got up and had a go, and the lad who'd come with me didn't even open his mouth. So then about 2 hours into the night, then Paul walks in. So I didn't even recognise him at all. You know, it was just like, well, hiya, you, mate. But then, well, after 10 minutes, he's great then, isn't he? You know? See, I was a bit of a rocker as a young'un, but my brother was completely Manchester. So when I went back and told him, and he's just like, mouth dropped. You know, do you know who he is? And I'm like, well, no, not really. Then he filled in the gaps and showed me some footage and played some music, and it was like, oh, all right, I know what you mean. But I'm really glad I didn't know that before I met him. I were asking him what his plan were about this, and he said that at this time we're experimenting. I think that were the main thing they were up to, really. There were a lot of vinyl being played, and I like that bit, and I like that bit, and, you know, they were looking for the groove, weren't they, I think, is the best way to term it.
Who was the friend that you went down there with? And what happened to him? Why did he not sing?
No kahunas. So it was just a case of that. Can you come down and do a bit? Can you do a bit? And I ended up doing a bit, and he didn't do anything.
And how did he feel about not doing anything?
Well, he didn't actually say anything all the way home as well. I think when we were driving home, he realised how jealous he were than what I'd just done.
Lee Mullen was also in Big Arm. He was on
course,
that tour.
Lee on percussion. Yeah. Lee ended up playing with George Michael.
Yeah.
Great percussionist.
Kate Bush.
In Kate Bush?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know he did Kate Bush.
Yeah.
Well, shout out to Lee Mullen, great percussion player.
Nice guy as well.
Yeah, genuine guy.
Paul and I come to work together again with Big Arm, which I jumped at the chance anyway, but because not just because of Paul of who he was, but because Paul of what a great he had great ideas and he was such a real funky person, you know. I'd like to call him a funky person because he played really groovy bass lines, you know, and he came up with great ideas. And I just thought, if you're going to do that lyrically in the band with Big Arm, then it's going to be a really good journey, you know. So it wasn't even an audition with Big Arm. It was just like, you're in the band, you know. He came to see me in the music shop in Johnny Roadhouse Music and said, Lee, I've been looking to trying to get hold of you. Will you come and play some percussion with my band, Big Arm? And I just said yes straight away. It was no like, I'm not sure if I can do it. Yeah.
So we had a full band, like guys. Pete was doing a lot of the music and I did the lyrics. Never wrote lyrics before in my life. But it was more like proving a point that I could still do stuff.
Right.
Very much like proving a point.
And tell me about the name of the band and where that came from.
That was Ian Brown's name for me, was Big Arm.
Why?
Because he said all my bass lines sounded really big from a big arm. So it just kind of stuck. Oh, Big Arm's a kind of a cool name. It comes from Ian's mouth.
Yeah.
Phil Sachs, the original Mondays manager, suggested a female backing singer, Monica, who did join the band for a while, and he was worried about Paul being the front person.
I did think at the time, you know, Paul, don't be the singer, you know.
Yeah.
Have your own band. Well, you know, it can be your own band. You don't have to be the singer.
He did have to be the singer.
I appreciate that now, yeah.
He had a point to prove, I think.
Yeah, but yeah. It's a little bit like Liam and Noel, isn't it? Yeah, the two brothers, they're very similar. I put them on in the city.
You did? I remember that, in the Chapel Street, that pub.
Yeah, that's right. And the Darkness played there as well.
The Darkness played the same night?
Downstairs, on the small stage. They hated me for that, the Darkness.
Danny Short, the Big Arm drummer, remembers that night well.
Our first gig was at the King's Arms in Salford for the Battle of the Bands. In the city. The King's Arms was like a derelict building at the time. It was it had been closed down and it had been opened up specifically for that that gig. And I just remember it being packed to the rafters full of these dodgy types, you know. And but it was a really good atmosphere, you know. And I remember when we were sound checking, I remember the sound man said to me, okay, can we have your bass drum, Danny? So I hit the bass drum, 1, 2, 3, and all this dust came down from the rafters and just covered everyone in muck, you know.
Can you think of any names that he came up with for people? I know that the driver, Chris and... do you remember Chris, the driver?
Yeah. Double pudding. Double pudding and chips, yeah. Which was Chris's favourite dish. Yeah. Yeah, he was a character.
But in the meantime, Chris, a.k.a. Double Pudding, has lost some weight. And former Mondays and Big Arm percussionist Lee Mullen has a new name for him.
He's now Single Pudding.
Single Pudding, no chips or peas. I was driver roadie for Big Arm for around about 2.5 years. And Paul nicknamed me. I was known in Big Arm as Double Pudding and Chips. Because back then, I was 20 stone, basically. And I loved that nickname. A lot of people would have got a smack off me for that nickname, but Paul gave me that nickname and I loved it. If they would have made a carry-on film about a band, that was it. Being in Big Arm, being in and around Big Arm, what with Danny Short and all the lads, and Paul had his moments, he was hilarious. I remember at the Water Rats one, Angela, Paul had a little treat for me and it was meeting Paul Cook at the Sex Pistols because I'm a big punk rocker and a drummer as well. And he was a big idol and he said, someone's coming to this gig tonight, Double Pudding, and they want to, and you're going to meet him. And it was Paul Cook and I was just blown away, you know. Oh, just amazing. I was a little bit of a mess, really, you know. I was a bit
starstruck.
A bit starstruck, you know.
Amazing.
Hiya, Paul! Love you!
Big arm drummer Danny Shaw never had any problems making Paul smile, as he happens to be a really great impersonator.
He's one of them, Paul. He was kind of, you know, he was easy to make laugh. He's quite a humorous fella, and Paul always encouraged everyone to be humorous and have a laugh and a joke, you know.
And he used to love your funny voices, I remember.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the impersonations are always an icebreaker, aren't they, you know.
He did impressions of every one of us,
didn't
he?
Every
one of us, yeah.
I used to be able to do one of Pete.
He did Pete, amazing. He did Pete better than Pete.
Brilliant.
Well, you know, he talks a bit like that, doesn't he, you know, so.
I'm not going to say it's easy.
Well, you know, he talks a bit like that, doesn't he, you know, so.
Now, don't you go, I was telling him that, anyway. And I remember Lee Mullen, the percussion player, Lee talks a bit like that, don't you? How you doing, mate? Hey!
Really good, thanks. Yeah, really good.
Paul was a big fan of The Simpsons. I always remember when we used to be recording and stuff, you know, he'd always have Simpsons on in the background.
Well, of course, you've got Monty Burns, haven't you? You know?
And of course, you've got Smithers and stuff like that. You know, come on, Marge. You know, stuff. Just little icebreakers like that, you know. And Paul would always, like, do this massive belly laugh, you know, which was, you know, really nice, you know. It always kind of, like, helped to warm the atmosphere, you know.
Big Arm got to support Ian Brown on two different tours. Daz was in an Oasis tribute band called Wonderwall and was playing with that band the night before the first gig with Ian.
The first gig we did with Ian Brown was Bray Head Arena in Scotland. I think it's about 20,000 people or something. So the night before, I'd been in Birmingham doing a massive gig, as far as I were concerned. And there were about 3,500 there. And we get to the Ian, but we went straight from that gig. I brought Wonderwall with me and we went straight to that gig. And I walked on the stage and the stage was bigger than the venue I'd played in the night before. And that was a bit of a, but as soon as the music started, oh yes, oh yeah. I felt well at home. It was amazing. I mean, to be fair, Ian giving us them two shots was fantastic, weren't it? To get us out there, you couldn't ask for more.
And so Pete, Daz and Danny all came together to reminisce about the good old Big Arm days.
I've got two great memories, right, from that night. The first one is when we're sat in catering and Ian Brown comes in and he goes over to the table and he's, like, looking around and he's like, where's my fucking pie? Who's it? Oh, Miss Gran. He storms out through this door, shuts the door behind him. And then, like, about 10 seconds later, he comes out and says, it's a cupboard.
Don't you get out of this fucking building?
Sorry, can I swear? Am I all right to swear?
Completely no, okay. That's what he said. I remember me and Lee kind of like, don't laugh. And I even remember Paul saying, God's sake, just leave it, you know, just say, you
know. The other memory from that gig was like, so we come on stage and I was like, oh, I've made it good here, I'm in a band, I'm supporting Ian Brown, it's just like 6,000 cap arena, I'm like, this is going to be great. So we go up to play the first song. Someone launched like a drink at me and it was like one of those Blue Wicked drinks. Or
oh,
something.
Yeah.
Just
yeah,
coated me a Thai keyboard. It was just like really sticky.
It's going to be one of those nights.
I was like, oh, I'll just put it on track.
Let it dry up, it doesn't spark. Spark's coming off it.
I was like, that's that then, isn't it? Cleaning it for days.
Oh, dear me. The crosses we have to bear, playing live.
Do you remember that? I can't remember which one it were with Ian Brown. And Paul had obviously told Ian Brown about Danny's mimicking skills.
Yeah.
So then Ian Brown comes rushing into the dressing room.
Who's
the mimic? Who's the mimic?
Who's the mimic? Who's the mimic?
Danny here goes, go on then. So he does Jules Holland, amazing. Introduces Ian Brown on Jules Holland.
Yeah.
And then this is Ian Brown. So it's a long time since you last worked with the Roses.
And he was like, oh, fucking great, man, great.
And then as soon as he walked out and shut the door, Danny started doing Ian Brown. This is getting very confusing.
Tell me about your friendship with Ian Brown.
Great guy. When Chico got really ill, which we'll talk about later,
yeah,
with cancer, you know, he was more like a brother to me than my own brother, which is difficult to say. You know, not once did my own brother say, "How's Chico?" And still all these years later, he's never asked.
But Sean was really good helping with the fundraiser that we had for Chico, so we've got to give him credit for that, but we'll come to that later.
Ian was like a brother to me at the time, you know, and I was seeing quite a lot of him.
Yeah. So by this time, we'd had a second child, Chico.
Chico,
who was born 19 months after our oldest child, Sonny, and weirdly, the age gap between Sonny and Chico is exactly the same as the age gap between you and Sean.
Spooky.
How did you feel about that?
Oh, God, I was worried for them. Yeah. I was worried for both of them, Chico and Sonny.
Yeah.
But, God, they've turned out really good.
Yeah. We didn't have to worry, did we? They never fought once, really.
No, no.
If they did, it was for, like, 1 minute, and then they were fine
again. And there was great mates again, and they're still great mates. Yeah. It's beautiful to see.
Yeah.
It's a lovely thing to see them getting along.
Yeah. Actually, you also, during that time, played bass for Ian Brown.
I did, yeah, on a few shows.
Yeah.
I played... I think I went on and did three songs where the bass player... put his bass down and played trumpet or some kind
It was a trumpet, yeah.
And I would come on and do these three songs, which was great for getting me back on stage.
Yeah.
You know, I hadn't done it for years. Yeah. And that was the way I got back into doing live music.
Yeah.
Thanks to Ian.
Yeah. So, Big Arm, tell me about that album.
I like it. I've just recently revisited it, and I think it's really good.
I know, it was really good, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And we deleted it after 1,000 copies, so I think it might be time to
re-release.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went to New York with the boys and decided to shoot a video.
Yeah, great video. And you did that.
I know.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Flashbacks. And there was it made the papers, actually. We were walking around the East Village, and the whole concept of the video was you wandering around the streets of the East Village of New York.
Would you have to have permission to film? We had no permission.
No, we were just doing it guerrilla style.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, talk about the thing that happened. The cop car.
The cop car came along, and I said, "Shoot the cops."
In a really loud voice.
Yeah.
"Shoot the cops!"
Like, shoot them as in film them. And I think they took umbrage to it, didn't they?
I think they misunderstood slightly.
Yeah,
but it all worked out okay in the end. But it was all over the papers.
Yeah, shoot the cops. I just meant film the cops.
Yeah, we nearly got arrested.
Yeah, don't shout "shoot the cops" loud in New York.
And the crew consisted of our sons, Sonny and Chico, who were about 6 and 7 at the time. In fact, Chico gets caught in one of the shots carrying a tripod. And that single was released to great critical acclaim. In Spiral Carpet's legend, radio DJ and all-round lovely human Clint Boone was a champion of the song from the start.
The first time I came across the Mondays was, I think it was January of 85, and New Order were doing a couple of gigs around the north of England. So one was in Blackburn, and then the night after they played in Leeds at Tiffany's. And I think the band that played in Blackburn were called Blue in Heaven, and then the band that played in Leeds the next night, I'd never heard of them, they were called Happy Mondays. And I thought, I wonder if this is a bit of a trick, like, because it's like Blue in Heaven and Happy Mondays. It's like Happy in Heaven and Blue Monday. So I thought, is this like a little New Order sort of gag? Anyway, there were two completely different bands. Happy Mondays that night was just like nothing I'd ever seen. It was just like a bunch of lads waiting for a buzz, like, but making music at the same time. It just looked so ramshackle and... And the way they dressed, it was like they were just... They looked like they'd not got dressed up to do the gig. You know what I mean? Just these were the clothes that just worn through the day, tracksuits and whatever else. And so I was smitten with the band from the first time I saw them. They are some of my favourite people in the world are in that band. And now, you know, and Paul was one of them, you know. And over the years, I always remember him being just a dead solid geezer. At the time when he had a big arm, I got the feeling that he needed help with that band. I think people would have preferred him to still be working with the Mondays, but he wanted to get that out of his system, and he did so, and he put out some great tracks. And I had the pleasure of getting him on XFM a couple of times on my evening show, it was at the time. Yeah, I mean, what a great man. What a great man, and what a great musician. I think he's going to go down in the history books as one of the great musicians of this part of the world, and certainly of that genre.
And then we did another video for Sunrays, which was a great summer tune, wasn't
great
it?
Great summer tune, Sunrays, yeah. I listened to that one the other day as well.
Yeah.
It was great. Loved that album.
You mixed the album in France. You went to the house in France, didn't you? Who was that with?
The one and only John Pennington.
Yeah.
Great engineer. First met John when he was like just 17 at Strawberry Studios. He was like the in-house engineer there.
Yeah.
And he's quite a genius at his job.
Yeah.
And we mixed it in France in the living room.
Paul was really proactive in that respect. So I'd be putting these tracks together and make it sound good. He'd come in, listen to me, and said, John, wow, this is great. You know, it's just exactly where we want to go. And we talk about, you know, what we wanted it to be or what was needed. I said, hey, Paul, it'd be nice if we put a bass line on this, or I'd try, you know, a new bass line.
Did he play the bass on that album?
Yeah, there was a few songs that he did. I mean, the original songs had his bass on them anyway. We'd reuse them. And sometimes the song needed something a bit more than a bass. So sometimes it became a bit more electronic than it would have been, but that was the groove of the style of the thing that came out. Similar to what we did with the Happy Mondays, was where he kind of listened to a song, said, oh, that bass line's great, and try and make his own. And that's the great thing about Paul, is he's very, very good at, he was very good at making things his own. There'd be a daily trip to go out to get baguettes and some nice cheese and some vegetables, and Paul would be the chef, because he, you know, he knew that I'd be working on the tracks all day.
And he did a remix of Sunrays, and everybody thought it was, because he used to work for Moby, everybody, but the rumour was on the streets that it was Moby's remix.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But it was actually Moby's producer's remix.
Yeah, 20-odd years he worked for Moby.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a great engineer, great musician as well.
And that song was played a lot in Ibiza that summer, I believe.
Oh, really?
Sunrays.
So I think I'd had a night and basically, you know, went a couple of bottles of Guinness or whatever it would have been. Probably French wine.
Do you remember what the brief was?
Ibiza.
Do you remember why we called you Gianni Panettone?
Because it was like, sounded Ibiza.
It sounded Italian.
It sounded Italian, yeah.
Gianni is Johnny, and Panettone is Pennington-y. It's very similar to your actual name.
You've got to come up with another name, yeah.
It was kind of a very Ibiza kind of vibe, the remix.
I'm going to have to revisit that one.
Really good. It's on the single. We've still got a few left, I think.
I don't know.
But yeah, we released it and then we de-released it.
Mm-hmm.
We de-released it because we had a plan to re-release it sometime in the future, and that future is just about now. It's available digitally any day now, and we also do have a few physical CD copies of the two singles and the album. But you did quite a lot of gigs, big arm gigs, didn't you?
Yeah, we did a tour, which was great. Supported Ian.
Oh, you supported Ian Brown?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The Glasgow show was great. Yeah, the Glasgow show was really good.
When the big arm boys get together, there's always tons of laughter. Yeah. Oh, I remember those laughs. Like, there's literally a sound of big arm laughter, and that was just it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a trio of giggles.
Yeah,
no, seriously, that's like really weird. That's like really familiar and strange, and something I've not heard for a long time.
It really is. That was the sound of Big Arm on the road in the van with Double Pudding. It was. That was what it was all about.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember that gig that where Pete was late and you had to go on stage before Pete got there and Derek had
to... I do. Bristol Academy.
Derek revived me.
Do you remember when you... Pete was late, Pete was at programming on keyboards, mm-hmm. and your dad, who was the tour manager,
had to stand
in for Pete.
He was pressing buttons and pretending to play the keyboards.
Yeah.
And then Pete walked on like halfway through the show.
took over surreptitiously.
Proper Spinal Tap.
Listen, right, I lived through that.
And it was Brixton Academy, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, do you know the best thing about that, right, was... I was fitting a kitchen, like, in the morning, and it overran, that's why I was late, and I had to finish it, because it was just like, there was no way I could kind of get out of it. So it was all like really super stressful and all the rest of it, right? So I get the train to London and then I get on the tube and I've never got off the tube in Brixton before. So it's like, you know when you come off the tube in Brixton, there's like loads of steps in there and then you just come out onto the main street and it's like, whoa. Anyway, so I'm coming up these steps and Chris is at the top of the steps and he's like, quick, come on, right? So I'm running down the street. I'm running down the main, the high street in Brixton, like following Chris, like trying to run down the street and all the rest of it. And then we kind of legged it in the stage door and he's like shoving me through and then on the stage and I put my bag down at the back of the stage. I walked on, took my coat off, put my coat down, tapped Derek on the shoulder. He got up and walked off and I sat down with his side. Yeah.
Was it the first song that you got? Was it the middle of the first song?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, your heart must have been pounding.
Well, it was nuts because it was like Brixton Academy with like however many thousand people in there. And yeah. It was just like...
And were you and the rest of the band not panicking?
No.
We knew he'd get there. No. Plenty of time, you know. No. Chris is a good driver. He knows his way around, you know.
Quick, mate.
Yeah, get in, mate. Man. Come on, you're going to be late.
Run faster.
For God's sake.
They needed man and van, and I was that man and van.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Your dad must have been doing something because he had to press go, didn't
he?
Oh,
yeah, yeah. He did his bit.
Yeah.
It's a good job he was there.
Yeah.
Derek's family wasn't like my family. And he didn't get opportunities. He didn't get backup off his parents and what have you. And he always said he never wanted to be like that. He would, you know, let his own children, if they wanted to do something, he would back them 100%.
And we went to Berlin. Do you remember Berlin?
Yeah.
To play something to do with the British...
British Embassy.
Or British Embassy or something.
We played in a big room in the British Embassy for like this music seminar thing that was going on in Berlin.
The band flew, but Paul's dad, Derek, Big Arm's tour manager, drove all the gear to Berlin with double pudding.
Me and Derek had to drive all the equipment over to Berlin while the band flew out. And that was a journey and a half. And always would be a massive cherished memory, that. I learned so much off that man.
So what did you get up to on the journey?
Just his humour and pointing out all the characters and how we got on with everybody. And then we watched the cabaret on the ferry. And you can imagine us two there, Max and Paddy, like two bank robbers watching the cabaret. We used to drive to London a lot, do a lot of one-off gigs. Because we were working hard. There was a little period there where we were working very hard. And I used to get back to Manchester sometimes. It'd be 4, 5, 6 a.m., dropping everybody off. I got all the way back to my house in Oldham, stopped the van and realised I still had Daz Gilkinson asleep on the behind the driver's seat.
Yeah.
Me, I just closed my eyes and off I go.
And I went, oh,
yeah.
And I had to then wake him up, Daz! And drive him all the way back to Heywood. So that was me in bed. And that was quite a common occurrence with Daz.
And Daz has vivid memories of clashing with someone in the dressing room at one of their gigs.
Oh, right, there's a good one. The Metro.
Zodiac Mind Warp.
We played with Zodiac Mind Warp. So we'd done our spot, which went down great, and then we're in the dressing room just mopping our brows and getting ready to go. And this magician-looking fella walks in, and he had a black cape on and a black hat and black shades and a cane.
Yeah.
And he walks in and he said, well, you look like you've done a bit, so if you won't mind fucking off so we could do a bit. And I'm looking, thinking, this magic act has got a terrible attitude. I didn't have a clue that he was a singer.
Just click your fingers and...
Yeah. And anyway, Paul stood toe-to-toe and give it him.
Yeah.
And me and Danny went upstairs thinking, I'm not standing with this prick.
No.
And then Paul come up and I said, how did you know him? And he goes, I don't know him. All right. I thought you knew him. That's why I walked out. Talk about backup. Yeah. Good luck, Paul.
I always remember Paul saying, because he said, didn't he, now fuck off. And Paul said, if you say fucking please, I will.
He was the lead singer. Yeah.
Whatever his name
is. So he were absolutely horrible. And then one of his crew come up to me about an hour later and said, listen, mate, is there any chance we could borrow your guitar ramp? But really? Yeah, ours has gone down. Oh, has it?
You're going down too.
So I thought, right, I'm going back in then. So I went down into the changing room and they were all there. And he sees me again. Oh, hello, one of them. And one of the lads just went, you need to shut up. He's going to lend us some equipment.
Yeah.
So we were like, oh.
Yeah.
I'll stare at him instead then.
I remember I met a Sex Pistol that night.
Paul Cook come and watched us.
In the audience, yeah. And so was Ian Astbury from the Cult.
That's right.
Well.
He were DJing.
He was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we were.
I was sat talking to him for ages, and then we left, and Paul said, you haven't got a clue who that were, have you? And I went, no, why were
I remember playing on stage, and there was actually a light shining on Paul Cook. I could see his face really, really vividly. It's like, there's a Sex Pistol. Bloody hell.
All nice guys, lovely to work with.
It was a nice vibe, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Between everybody.
Really good vibe.
I used to say that, yeah.
Mm.
And Daz Gilkinson had an Oasis tribute band, didn't
he? Yeah, he was Noel Gallagher in the Oasis tribute band.
Wasn't there a gig that you did at, Pontins or something?
No.
There was a Pontins gig.
Really?
And I think he played as well as the Oasis tribute band on the same bill.
Oh, that's funny.
I can't remember.
That's funny. I guess it ended up in Pontins.
Well, during this time, let's talk about what was going on with the Mondays. So you'd left.
I'd left.
And what happened after
no
that?
No Mark Day, no PD, no Paul Ryder. Gaz was hanging on in there.
Yeah.
And Sean got...
But Rowetta was still... Was she still there then?
To a certain point, yeah.
Yeah, and then she left because she had a fight with Sean.
Sean has fights with everyone.
So it was just left that it was Bez, Gaz, Sean.
Yeah, and a couple of session players.
Yeah.
And they just drove it into the ground.
And then Gaz eventually left, and your son Jacob took over on drums for a while, didn't
Jacob
he?
Jacob drummed for a while, that's when he... It was great to see my son drumming.
Yeah.
And I went to watch them in LA.
I know, I remember that.
It was a very strange experience.
Okay, so during that time, there was a film being made called 24 Hour Party People. tell us about that.
I really liked it.
It was a great script, wasn't it?
Great script, yeah. Lots of exaggeration.
It was during that time that Paul met actor Paul Popplewell, who was given the job of playing Paul Ryder in the film. Your knee's in, does that matter?
No, I'll put my knee down, look.
Just check the shot with my glasses.
And is that, am I eyeline a bit wide there, though?
I'm going to sit next to the camera.
You can tell I'm an actor, can't you?
Professional.
I don't know about that, but conscious of my eyeline.
Oh. Do you want to... not? Why do you want to wear your sunglasses?
I don't know, I've just been, like, silly.
Does it feel weird that this is where we did the podcast? That's where Paul used to sit. And that's where I used to sit.
It's quite sad, actually.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, I nearly cried again.
We're both kind of criers, aren't we?
I'm a crier, yeah. I never used to be, but I am now.
I wonder what that... What is it about life that makes us want to cry, do you think?
I don't know. Is it? I don't know. I just over the years, I've got much more comfortable being my authentic self. I'm an actor, and I'm in my mid-40s now. But when I was in my early 20s, I landed a dream role of playing Paul Ryder in the film 24 Hour Party People. And having been a Mondays fan, it was a dream job.
But the rock and roll mums, Paul and Sean's mum Linda and Gaz Whelan's mum Sandra, weren't too impressed with the film.
What aspect of it did you not like?
Well, we're there again when they blamed the Mondays for the closure of factory. That always really griped me.
Yeah, yeah.
When I knew that wasn't true. But you've got to, you just go along with it.
Yeah.
Otherwise you'd turn yourself grey. I went to see it and I remember they were filming in... Kent Close, where we used to live. But they didn't use our actual house because it went round like that and they couldn't get the camera van down. So they used a house on Weaver Avenue.
Me and Danny, who played Paul and Sean, hit it off like that. In fact, the first day we ever met in the rehearsal room in Ancoats, we were supposed to be having a band rehearsal and we just... worked our way through a few crates of Red Stripe, I think, or Stella or something like that. And it became like a running joke that it was like methadone acting. Not that anybody took methadone, but do you know what I mean? It was like a tongue-in-cheek thing because we were partying. And Rowetta took us under her wing big time.
I didn't dislike it. I mean, you just accept it, don't you? I enjoyed it.
I just thought it was crap.
No, I didn't.
I don't know. I just didn't. I don't know. I mean, the music part in it I like, but the rest I thought, it's a load of nonsense, this. I'm not very patient, am I?
She said, I'm going to get you to meet Paul. And we went to your house in Worsley, didn't we?
Yeah.
And me and Danny were worse for wear.
Yeah.
Which has always bothered me, really, knowing what I know about Paul now. But, it was a world I didn't know about, like that he didn't drink at the time. And we turned up pretty much out of it. I think we'd been in the dry bar all day and Rowetta picked us up and said, he'll see you later. And we, I think we even brought beers into your house and we sat there drinking them.
What did you think of Steve Coogan's portrayal of Tony Wilson?
I thought it was very good.
Yes, that was excellent.
Yeah.
So if you were a film critic and you had to sum up the film in one sentence, what would you say about the film?
Not bad.
Well, I don't think...
Disappointing.
I wasn't disappointed.
Well, yeah, I was.
No,
yeah.
I just laughed.
Yeah.
Mind you, I laugh at weird things, so... Yeah.
But it was a massive thing for us because we were fans of the band and also we were taking it quite seriously. about wanting to do everybody justice and not be caricatures and not kind of, you know, get it right. To the point where I came out saying to Danny, I know I need to tone it down. He's quite quiet and he's quite shy and, like, you know, he's not brash and loud. And to the point where sometimes on set I would be doing less and in between takes I'd be pissing about and fooling about. I remember putting one of the lads' face in a pie one day or something in between a take, and Michael said, do that on camera. But when the camera was rolling, I would tone it down a bit because that may be a bit more Paul.
What about Paul's performance as the drug dealer, Gangster?
I did laugh at that. Well, it was fiction, wasn't it? You take no notice of it. It's fiction.
It was all pretty much improvised. I mean, Frank Cottrell Boyce wrote a brilliant script.
Yeah.
But it was pretty much a base starting point. I think we shot, for a 90-minute, two-hour film, I think we shot over 200 hours of footage.
Wow.
I could be wrong there. I know it was a silly amount and it was multi-camera. There was a lot of cameras, I seem to remember. Oh, wow. It was handheld a lot of the time, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to remember, we were partying hard, so it's a bit hazy for us.
So 24-hour party people, you didn't really... You wouldn't say, go and see it, it's brilliant.
Oh, I would.
Would you? Yeah. I think I would again. No.
I would.
I can't put my finger on what it was, but I don't know, it wasn't right. Yeah. I didn't enjoy it, no.
So I hit it off with Paul, or I thought I did, on set, because Paul would come down to set, wouldn't he? I mean, I don't know if you remember, you were probably working and stuff, but he'd come down to set with his pal, Rob. Was it Rob? His mate.
Oh yeah, Rob F. Yeah.
And he'd knock about, and I was really quite taken with him. Bit of a fanboy, I suppose. But then not, because he was really just easy to get along with, and very human. And I liked his energy, and he was really kind. Do you know what I mean? I nearly went then. He was just really kind and really generous.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think if someone was playing me in a film, not that that would ever happen, but I'd be a bit weirded out by it, probably. I don't know that he was. He was quite excited by it all.
Well, yeah, I suppose I did enjoy it in a way, but I didn't like it.
Wasn't a film like a film.
Oh, no, didn't expect it to be, really.
And he was just really enthusiastic. I guess we just hit it off, became friends. I liked his energy. And I guess we just got to know each other as friends.
Yeah.
And then obviously time rolled on, didn't it? And then a year later, I'm back in Manchester doing a play at the Royal Exchange. And I don't know whether it was him or you who invited me to stay, or whether I invited myself. I honestly can't remember. But I really enjoyed living there and, like, spending more time with you.
Yeah.
And, like, just hanging out and he was making his album, his Big Arm album at the time.
I didn't expect to go and see, like, a drama or a film like a film. I expected to be a bit Spinal Tappy, which it was.
Well, you see, Spinal Tap gets on my nerves. I'm not a great fan of Spinal Tap.
Yeah, it was kind of loosely based on fact, wasn't
mm-hmm,
it?
Mm-hmm. Especially the Barbados thing, I was really exaggerated, like I spoke about earlier. I had a little part in it, played this Manchester gangster. Don't know which one I was playing. It was like a mixture of two of the gangsters that was around at the time.
Yeah.
But as a movie, it was great. It was really good.
Okay. Do you remember the day that you filmed?
Yes. They recreated the interior of the hacienda.
Hang on a minute, you've got some... Or is it a cut? Oh, yeah, it's better. Right, do you remember... do you remember the day that you filmed?
Yeah, they... The movie people recreated the interior of the nightclub, the hacienda, in a big old Victorian warehouse in Manchester, which is now apartments. But it was incredible what they did. I mean, it was just like it. It was just like the real thing, but inside a big warehouse. And on the night of the filming, it was like open as a club to invited guests. Yeah. And Mike Pickering DJed, and it was just like being inside the club.
Yeah.
Apart from when you went to the toilet, you opened the door and it was just a brick wall there because it was inside a... It was incredible what they did.
Yeah.
Down to every dimension they had. I think they got the old... what do you call it? Blueprints.
Yeah.
Off Ben Kelly. Is it Ben Kelly? I think they got the old blueprints and did it all to the dimensions of the club.
Yeah.
What an incredible night.
Yeah.
I think Bernard Sumner said we should buy the building and keep it open.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah.
Now apartments, though. Just like all the old Victorian places in Ancoats.
And what was the part that you played? A gangster?
A gangster, yeah. Extorting money off Tony.
Yeah.
Inside the club. It was. I had fun doing it. I like a bit of acting.
Yeah, you've done quite a bit in your time. I've done a bit.
Yeah.
What else have you been in?
Machine Gun Kelly video. I had the main part in that.
Yeah.
You
never got paid for that.
Never got paid for that. Like everything, really, in my life, never get paid for it. I had a bit part in another TV show in England. I was the house band on Turn On Terry, is one of your programmes.
Let's have a look at it. You rewrote the lyrics to Sweet Soul Music to fit in with the show, from what I remember. Gonna watch the show, got to watch the show. Here's the show, let's go. Yeah, with Terry Christian.
Yeah, yeah.
And Tony Wilson and John Robb were the regular...
There was the pundits.
The pundits.
Yeah. Like that,
weren't they? And musician, author, journalist and lovely man John Robb has fond memories of that show.
Well, Turn On Terry is like a series. It's basically a reviews programme on telly which you made. And Terry was the main host. And it was great having Paul as a house band, you know. And it's, yeah, that's always the old thing about Happy Mondays, isn't it? All those guys in that band, they work really well in showbiz, even though they were quite mad people and quite renegade people. Any opportunity, any kind of showbiz, they could do it, and it doesn't blemish them.
It's good being the house band.
Yeah.
You don't have to play a full song. Did you see the soaps? Did you watch the soaps?
We didn't have a budget, so mm-hmm. What we had to do was we got the band to come in 5 different outfits.
That's right.
And we recorded. You were like performing all the stings between the segments of the show,
mm-hmm.
And we recorded them all in one day and just rotated them throughout the series of 28 episodes.
You're giving away secrets.
I know. It was, saved us a load of money, though.
Yeah. I enjoy a bit of acting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't
doing some. Yeah, well, it was. Kind of.
Kind of, yeah.
Being on stage is a bit like acting. Playing the bass is a bit like acting. You know.
Do you enjoy being looked at by people?
Hate it.
So why do you enjoy acting then?
Because there's not an audience there.
But when you're on stage, there is.
I know. That's why I get stage fright, knowing that people are looking at me.
Former Mondays manager Phil Sachs remembers Paul's nerves only too well.
Paul, of course, would be sick at the side of the stage before he went on every single night, because he was always stage fright. So he'd throw up at the side of the stage. Go on.
And his mum, Linda, witnessed it too.
He was never confident. He did suffer terrible from nerves. Terrible from nerves. He'd be sick. He'd be running to the loo.
But you must love it at the same time when people clap.
I love being in a band, and I like playing live, but I don't like being looked at. You know, playing in a small club is more nerve-wracking than a big arena.
Monday's drummer Gaz Whelan went to support Big Arm at their first gig.
Well, he did his Big Arm stuff. He was great, and he was a great frontman. I remember that. Ironically, the first gig he did at King's Arms in Salford. It's the first gig I'm doing in a couple of weeks, and I go back, and it's really weird. And I remember walking up the stairs, there's the room upstairs, And he was shaking at the top of the stairs. I said, no one's judging you, you'll be right. And he went, I know, I said you'll be fine. And as I walked past, I went, fucking, how are you going to do that fucking singing, everyone looking at you? And he said, and as I walked past, he went, I heard you.
Okay, so Big Arm was happening. You'd been mm-hmm. touring with Ian Brown.
Yeah.
The house in France was all going well. We were renting it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd invited one of my good friends, Rosemary Barrett, who was a journalist for the Manchester Evening News, mm-hmm. and she did some writing for the Sunday Mirror.
Yeah.
She was coming over with her husband and four kids.
Four kids.
To come and do a travel feature featuring our property.
Yeah.
We were heading for the ferry at Dover, and all I remember is that we were running really late and it was really stressful. And then as we were coming down into Dover, you come down a hill, I could see the ferry leaving the port. And I thought, oh no, because you were planning something. I think we were going to go out to an Italian restaurant, weren't we? And I thought, oh no, that's scuppered the plans. So I remember we got to the port and myself or John rang you just to say, oh, look, we've missed the ferry and we've got to hang around, wait for the next one. And you said, oh, that's fine. I'll get, maybe we won't go out for the Italian. Well, I'll get Paul to light the fire. put the fire on because it hasn't been lit all year or something. We'll light the fire and get it warmed up and we'll have takeaway. So we thought, great, that sounds fantastic. Get the fire on. But then we didn't realise that when we got there, there was an actual fire. So when we were on the boat, that was it. We came over on the boat, and then as we were coming in to land at the other side, there's a voice message from you, which John reads out to me, and he says, Ange's just left this message about maybe not to come because the chateau's on fire. So I laughed and I went, oh God, she's just joking. That's not, you know, that it's, you know, she's joking. That's not real. And he went, why would she joke about that? And I was absolutely convinced that it was just like a little practical joke. Anyway, it wasn't. So I remember I think you'd said, maybe you should stay in the port or get some accommodation. We're thinking, we have no idea what we're going to do. So anyway, we ended up making our way over to see you, didn't we, in the village, and arrived and followed the plumes of smoke. Arrived to find you taking a wee in the bushes.
And at the same time, we had two guys that were antique experts
mm-hmm.
that we were potentially going to do a show with.
Yeah.
With them showing people around antique shops in France, and uh-huh. my friend Alan Howard was with us.
I'd been there the week beforehand, and my ex-wife and kids were in the top floor in the James Bond suite with the golden sparkly bath that was like the king of kitsch room. It was superb. That day we'd gone out to view a potential Brocante little markets in Calais. And while we were there, we get a phone call from Paul saying, oh, I think we've got a problem. I think the roof might be on fire. And one of the things that I remembered actually prior to this was that Paul loved a roaring fire. And I'll never forget what he used to do. I mean, we got a fire here. And what you do is you put like a half a matchbox size of fire lighter and a couple of bits of kindling in, and then you kind of build it up slowly. But not if you're Paul. If you're Paul, you grab a handful of fire lighters, you put 2 foot of kindling on, you throw a match on and it goes whoosh, and the flames go roaring up the chimney. And that was Paul's way of starting the fire. And he's right, it was a roaring fire. But on this particular occasion, we get a phone call from Paul saying, I think we've got a problem. I think the roof's on fire.
So there was me, Alan Howard, and the two antique guys.
Mm-hmm.
You and Sonny and Chico were in the house. I was out with Alan and the two antique guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Rosemary and her husband John and their four kids were on the way. They were on the ferry in Dover.
Yeah.
I got a phone call from you saying...
Yeah.
And I've never heard you so panicked ever, I don't think, saying, what number do I call for the fire brigade?
Mm-hmm.
tell me about that. What happened?
Well, the roof was on fire.
So you talk, go back a bit. So you were sitting in the living room. The boys were on the Xbox.
Yeah, and I had a fire going, a real fire in the fireplace.
Yeah,
which was it was pretty. It was roaring. It was a nice fire because it was a winter's night.
Yeah,
it was. I think it was
October.
No, October. Yeah, so it was lovely and warm, and I looked up and saw like the roof was on fire. The ceiling, that's when I called you saying it's on fire, what do I do?
Coming up on the next episode.
I thought of something really funny that happened.
That you're going to tell the story going to Cannes to the film festival.
Michael Winterbottom was so blown away by his acting, he just said that he really plays sinister well to play this secure, what are you going to call them, but the gangsters really, who ran the door. And he was really impressed with his acting.
I was very relieved during the movie that when he was on the tour bus, naked, that when he turned round, he had a big cock.
I know!
I was so pleased. It was like, yeah, go on.
There was a duality there around one person that was an addict and a real desperate, desperate addict, and another person I couldn't relate to that just wasn't an addict. And I think for me, if I'm really looking in, I think there was a lot of sorrow about from him about the fact that he was an addict and just didn't want to be.
He smiled at me and said, I'm a race car driver from the 70s and I'm supposed to be dead. And it was like, no way.
What do you mean by that?
Well, he faked his own death.
We're playing out with John Pennington, a.k.a. Gianni Panettone's remix of Big Arm's Sun Rays, which was actually a bit of a club hit in Ibiza when everyone thought it was Moby's remix.
Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe to the podcast and give us a nice review and rating. And please join our special club by becoming a patron of the show. Go to patreon.com/thePaulRyderTapes and join us as a special founding member. New limited edition merch is being released first to our patrons, so don't miss out. Go to our website at paulryder.tv for links to our socials and our shop. And we'll be back next week, same time, same place. Thank you to all our guests, and of course, big love and respect as usual goes to the star of the show, the late and great Paul Anthony Ryder. Know much about names that he used to give people?
I didn't know this until the funeral. Victor said he went through the list of names, didn't he?
Yeah.
And there was one for Ian Brown, and there was Paul Popple Crazy for me, which made me laugh. Coming from one of the Happy Mondays.
's intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.